Well, we'll leave the seven servants till fall, I mean, that's probably what we'll do, right?
That will probably what we'll do, yeah. That will save our sanity in the summer.
Well, maybe we should read it over the summer.
You could read it over the summer.
Then we'll be insane when we come back in the fall.
And we won't notice.
Yeah.
We're needing this summer.
Just to again remind you that the Abraxas here isn't exactly the same as the Abraxas in the Seven Servants. It's like, I don't know, I got the feeling he was still trying to hang on to a shred of sanity in this.
In the Appendix C?
In Appendix C. I think we'll see more of this, though, about fearing God. That's certainly one of the things that Jung harps on a lot. This idea that God is all good and all saving and so on is part of the implications of what he's saying, that God is many things. And one of the things God is destructiveness. And you have to fear that.
I could never understand growing up. We're taught God is love, God is good, you know, God is light, but you need to fear that.
Yeah.
You need to fear God.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Now, this more fullness,
yeah.
The dark side of God, yeah.
And even when I think, you know, if you listen to the sermons that do say fear God, it's you fear God's moral judgment.
Right, punishment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Punishment. And this is, you fear being taken over by God's rage or God's lust or something like that.
If you go against history, that really, what history is so prominent in my mind is Galileo. I mean, everybody knows about him. Like, he had the nerve to say the world is not
yeah.
And I believe he was put on at least house
yeah.
In prison, if not in prison.
Yeah, and he was pardoned, I think, in around 1870 or something like that. 3 years later.
And just one that must.
Yeah.
That fear, the fear of punishment is so parent-child, whereas the fear of being taken over by emotions is much more adult.
Yeah.
Adult.
Right. No, but it is. What Jung's trying to get away from is this parent-to-child thing. Or child-to-parent thing. Yeah, absolutely. Children don't take responsibility.
And that, you know, with an adult-to-adult relationship, you can really influence with emotions each other
mm-hmm.
and the relationship. And that is something to be feared if someone gets in and get out.
Mm-hmm.
Unintended consequences. So, they just...
It's a beautiful twist, I find.
It's a reciprocal. It can be a reciprocal, but relationship.
Yeah,
but
much
it,
more reciprocal.
But it takes a strong ego, I think, to have that dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone has that. And that's one of the positives of religion, I guess, that those people who can't. Are held within that system.
Mm-hmm. I should give him an AK-47 or something.
Yeah.
Don't worry about finding God. God will find you. Second paragraph. Or the second half of the... Second half of the second column of Appendix C. That's just another way of saying what we've been saying. Now, I think it gets a little weird, the last large paragraph on the first column, as if he's trying to hang on to the old God. That's how I understand it. But you have in you the one God, the wonderfully beautiful and kind, the solitary, star-like, unmoving, he who is older and wiser than the Father, you as a safe end, etc., 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 who leads you among all the darkness and death scares of dreadful Abraxas. Now that will not be in Seven Servants of the Dead. As if Abraxas is ruled by another power. And in the seven sermons, Abraxas will be the highest power.
So, this isn't an image of God, a more conscious image of God versus an unconscious image?
Well, I think he's trying to make it that, but I think he then realizes there is no such thing.
No such thing as becoming more conscious?
As a, you know, this big, kind, guiding figure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
unto itself.
Yes, there is guidance. Yes, there is creativity. But it's right smack dab in the middle of Abraxas, and you have to go into him to find it. I think that's going to be the difference we'll see between the black book and the red book.
It seemed to me that he, in this appendix, was talking about this middle way, almost in a Taoist.
Yeah. Where is that?
It seemed all throughout it, not to be a part of this and not to be a part of that, but you are as well. It's like somehow you're in the center of the opposites. And that was like being in Tao to me. I don't know.
It's true, though I get the feeling he's still thinking he can protect himself against the storm.
Against what?
The storm. Where that Tao, that center way, will come by jumping into the storm. And this is kind of standing a little bit aloof from it.
And yet he did jump into the storm.
He did, but apparently after he wrote this. See, this is the black book.
Okay. So this is
pre-red book.
This is pre-split with Freud, or
I don't know if I go that. We don't have a date, do we? I don't know. I could check if he says so anywhere.
In the front somewhere, they talk about
what years? Yeah, can you dig that up real quick?
Black book 5, how many black books were there?
Yeah, which one is this from? Black Book 5, that's what this one is from. So
does it give a date?
April 1914 through June 1916.
Well, that's about 1916
Well, here's the Black Book go through April 1914.
This is Black Book 5 for the scrutinies. See down a little further.
So a different 5 than the one referred to at the top, evidently.
Well, now you're getting up.
Yeah,
you're at the front there.
Yeah, this is Black Book 1, 2
five
through
5.
Six. Right, and this is 5 and 6, April 14th through June.
So 5 must be split in 2.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see if you agree then when we get there.
Okay.
But I detected a difference in tone, and it could, remember, he wrote the black book and then he rewrote the red, so he might have even done it more or less around the same time, but reflect on what he had just written and then changed it when he put it in the red book. As far as I get it, the red book is not quite as hopeful about this benevolence that oversees things. It's true there is benevolence, but we have to find it. And what we're met with is Abraxas, and what we try to extract out of Abraxas is the benevolence versus an benevolence overseeing the process.
He talks about the Pleroma in here.
Yes.
And is that where Abraxas resides?
Oh, Lord.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to ask these questions.
They
but
him. Abraxas himself the Pleroma.
Do they?
At some point.
Well, okay, so you asked for it.
That's a punishment.
Thank you, Kathy.
I'm sorry, but I'm struggling with this. Because it doesn't make rational sense.
No, it doesn't. The Pleroma, we will get to in the first book of the sermon. But
okay, well, we can wait till
well,
then.
No, that's, I want to torture you now.
Okay. I love it when you torture me.
We can think about it over the...
You can worry about it all summer long.
Yeah.
I believe it's fair to say the Pleroma is even prior to Abraxas. You could almost say the Pleroma is the void. But here's again the catch. It's the chaos or the void in which all things are possible. The first condition. That's how the Gnostics talk about it. As he will work with it, there's two senses to that. First of all, two senses to it. One, it's the world of possibility. So therefore it's good. I'm being very simplistic. Mm-hmm. There are people who never get past the world of possibility. Therefore, it's bad. It's both. There are people who cannot imagine a different life, and for them, images of the Pleroma would be positive. There are people who are always talking to you about what they will do and never do. They're living the world of possibility and never the world of actuality. And we would say in the Jungian psychobabble, they're living in a pleromatic state. Wonder children, puers, often adolescents, certain dreamy visionaries who have a vision and an image for all possibilities, but never can sit down to making it real. On the other hand, of those people who can't imagine doing anything different. So the Pleroma would be just the condition of unconsciousness in which life is still potential. You could say Abraxas would be all the potentials in that state. And, you know, it shows up in dreams as flying. That's a classic dream of somebody who has more potential than reality. Dreamers. I was thinking of a guy who was about to marry his third alcoholic wife. His marriage counselor, who helped him through, helped the second marriage get divorced, said to him, "Do not get involved with another woman for a year. And when you do, for God's sakes, come in for premarital counseling." Within 2 months, he was engaged. I said to him, "For God's sakes, get into premarital counseling." He ignored everybody, got married. Pretty soon, his children of his wife were stealing his things. Almost got him killed because he went to pick them up at a certain address where their car broke down, in which a drug deal was taking place. Guns were pulled out. He got so upset, his performance at work decreased and he got fired. See, that's pleromatic. Just no ability to look at the reality of the situation.
I guess I'm trying to relate it to the creation of the world. So the Pleroma would have been pre-Big Bang.
Yeah.
And Abraxas would be the Big Bang, where all possibilities burst.
That's not a bad analogy. Okay. Yeah. You know, for most of us, it's the world of possibility. But there are people who, you know, believe, you know, coming to a seminar every other week at the same time is too much. That would be somebody living in the Pleroma. They might tell you about the conspiracy of the government that to do God knows what. I mean, they got all sorts of theories, but they can never put anything in practice.
And yet it is a place that an individuated person can dip into for creative...
Dip training. Into and pull out of.
You were going to say there are two aspects of it, the world of possibilities.
Oh, yeah, and the world of being stuck in possibility. So all this talk about the one God, the bottom of 370 over to top of 371, I think it's going to be re-examined in the Red Book. And then that pretty much continues to the middle of the first column on 371. Again, I don't think you will hear this kind of talk in the Red Book. That Christ gives us protection against Abraxas. See, he's still clinging on to the light.
Where's that, 371?
371, the first column.
That's a powerful belief, though. You would not believe the number of times that even really old people die in the hospital. And their family just is devastated because they were expecting them to live. Because they prayed and they were certain that this Christ would be healed. And you can see it in their faces. They just don't even know how to handle that.
Yeah.
Their whole faces.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Sorry.
In here too, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In here too, he says, you know, that God will find you just as Eros.
Right. Now that I think is true.
And are they both as destructive and creative? Could we say?
Yeah.
As he says in here. Okay.
Yeah. But I think again. Remember, where that can be a little misleading, Abraxas is everything and Eros is just one of those everythings. In other words, you might put it differently, life's going to get you sooner or later.
Yeah, if you live in the world.
If you live in the world, you're going to get burned sooner or later. Yeah.
Okay. And that's the suffering without end that he's talking about.
Yes.
That is a little depressing.
Yes, yes. Well, I think you'll find the red books a little more upbeat.
Okay.
Free man from the power of Abraxas. You're going to see later going into Abraxas and pulling the meaning out of him is the saving event. Here it's freeing you. But I think the reason our editor included this, it's just because it's about Abraxas.
And I think they mentioned Abraxas early on when we started the study. I can't remember where that reference was.
And now it gets. I mean, look what he's just said. Fleeing from the power of Abraxas. And then over in the next column, second column on 371, do not flee Abraxas. See what I mean? That's the unconscious. Blah, blah, blah. One thing one minute, one thing the next. And that will get honed down a little bit in the Red Book. Do not flee Abraxas. A little further. I fear him. I love him. He is the life of the earth. That says enough. You need to recognize the multiplicity of the gods. That might be a good way to summarize what Abraxas is, the multiplicity of the gods. You cannot unite all into one being. Now, by one being, I think he's referring to that one God earlier. And again, all that, this kind of stuff will be dropped. What we'll be left with is Abraxas as the multiplicity of the gods, and what are we supposed to do about it? That's where he'll go to Red.
Yeah, that whole idea, to him all your love and worship is due, like a big question mark.
Yeah.
Because that's the Christian God all over
again. Yeah. This changes. Okay. And I could have almost skipped it, but I wanted to give you a feeling for Abraxas. You might just say Abraxas is everything. That everything can be sacred.
So Abraxas could be sacredness in everything?
You could put it that way. But you got to include war and death and rape and murder.
So hard.
It's very hard. And it's when we don't honor that rape and murder does happen. It's just the opposite of what you'd expect. That's kind of crazy, which is why Christianity came along and got rid of it. It's very dangerous. That's why he says fear it. Now, we'll soon see that the Abraxas is understood as the starting point. Technology is taking a beating.
Normally, if we don't have my car, I was getting my stuff together. I forgot to use my pocket.
Is it an iPhone?
I have no
idea. Oh. I can show you how to turn it off.
Damn nuisance, that's what it is.
I could show you.
I wouldn't even have it except my wife's trying to keep track of me.
She's worried about you, huh?
That's his calling.
I'm sure it is. She leaves at about 2:30.
It's a spy job.
So that would be what you're saying is if we don't recognize the potential we have to kill someone, then that's when it becomes the
right
thing.
Right.
If we really would look at that potential and recognize that we have that tree, then we would be able to change it. We probably would be able to, at least for our little community, avoid an all-out war. But
yes. And let's say dreams of murder can be positive. The dreams of murder can be possible. So if you say murder is bad, then that, where would that leave Jung killing Siegfried? See what I'm saying? Well, there's no place in our Christian iconography that says murder is good. And yet in our dreams we're often saying, or at least sometimes saying, well, good, you killed that figure.
Well, unless we can think and feel symbolically.
Think and feel symbolically and recognize how complicated emotions become once you take that step. That would be moving in the direction of taking Abraxas as a starting point.
So if we symbolically look at the darkness within us, then we have to also symbolically look at the lightness and the goodness as well. We can't just leave one out. And Abraxas would have both that light and dark aspect. And all
That's
the
right.
colors in between.
And all the colors in between.
Bob Dylan quote? You're going to break the law.
You got to be honest. Well, we didn't get to Appendix A. Maybe we'll start with that in the fall. Just to give you a picture. Page 364. Here is here's what we're talking about. And the reason we're talking about it, the reason we talk about Abraxas, is this is Abraxas down here. And the reason we're talking about this in the context of the Red Book is this was an attempt to schematize some of the experiences in Seven Sermons. So we've gone from introduction to the Seven Sermons in Appendix C to an attempt to schematize some of the forces in the Seven Sermons here, one of which is Abraxas. We'll do this, and then we'll start with the Seven Sermons. If you want, if you do want to read the Seven Sermons over the summer, let me just give you what I have tried to do is summarize the main theme of each sermon. And they're terribly confusing. But if you at least can hold on to the main theme as you read each one, and the book says starting Sermon 1, starting Sermon 2, it may help. Sermon 1 talks about the Pleroma. Sermon 2 about God and the devil. Sermon 3 about Abraxas. Sermon number 4 about multiplicity. Sermon 5 and 6 about spirituality and sexuality. And Sermon 7 about man. I'll go through those again. First one is the Pleroma. Second, God and the devil. Third is Abraxas. Fourth is multiplicity. Fifth is the spirit and sex. Sixth is spirit and sex. Seven is man. That's just, don't worry about every freaking detail. Just try to get the main thrust. Otherwise, I think you'll just get too frustrated.
Quick, what's one? I've missed one.
One, Pleroma.
Yeah.
Two, God and devil.
Right.
Three, Abraxas. Mm-hmm. Four, multiplicity. Five and six, the same. Spirit and sex.
Oh, I had them all.
Spirituality and sexuality.
Okay.
And number seven is mankind.
So what pages are you on?
How far do we go?
Well, let's see. I had to read, I think, through Sermon 1, didn't I?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which was page
340.
Is it 348?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Sermon 1. Why don't you read, I don't know, we're going to spend a good amount of time on this picture, probably at least an hour. So, maybe half an hour. So, maybe read to the beginning of read to just to the beginning of the third sermon on 349, where it says, "But when Philemon had ended his speech." Stop there. Stop before that. Yeah, well, read through 349, first column, right before it says, "But when Philemon had ended his speech." Okay, so you got the dates. Hopefully we'll be back here. Thanks for hanging in there. We will finish it someday.
Thank you, Gary.
And we'll see you in the fall.